You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Break!
To the Black Is Network. It's your man Chris, one half of the brothers Layman, and you are checking out the Black Is Break. I want to just say I appreciate you guys giving the feedback and everything. I know we've been kind of slow on getting back to it, and you know, we read it and we pass it on to the crew. But you know, when the way we get up, it's so hard to read it back to you guys and let you guys know we appreciate what you do. But we do read them and everything. Appreciate the 5-star review on iTunes as well. Gotta read this last one. I want to give a shout out to my man Aaron B from the Black Astronauts. Left us a 5-star review. Family, thought I had left a 5-star review, but I never did. So here is one. Listen to these folks. They are worth your time. Appreciate it, man. As always, man, Aaron's good dudes, good peoples. Make sure you are checking them out, supporting the Black Astronauts podcast. Great show. You guys will not be disappointed. I love that show. Check them out, iTunes, Stitcher, and, of course, blackastronauts.com. This is part two of our discussion about the black vote. We kind of touch on money and politics, trying to be able to change people's minds, holding up our standards for the black community, and this mob mentality. Just touch on a lot of different things. So once again, thanks for listening.
What do black people want revolutionized? What do we, I mean, because I see us here and I'm like, if there's anything that I feel should be at the forefront of our agenda is the incarceration.
Yeah.
The
criminal justice system.
The criminal justice. That should be at the forefront.
That's why Obama's Supreme Court pick is so frustrating.
Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
Because he's playing politics.
But it's so frustrating.
That should be at the forefront. That dude in, and he has the worst criminal justice judicial record
of everything.
Yes.
But that, to me, should be at the top of our list, given all the challenges that we're going through, given the statistics in the black community, given education, happening.
I mean, honestly, if you really want to talk about the top of the list, just to go back to sort of a Hillary criticism of Bernie, it's the money in politics, because it does have to do with everything kind of stems from that. And so, like, obviously we need criminal justice reform, but if we can get the money out and the influence, like the things that we could do would be amazing. And that's why I think like Hillary harps on, oh, Bernie's one issue. And it's not that he's one issue. He just sees that this one thing keeps us from moving forward in almost every other area of our politics.
But I don't even know, because the issues concerning black people in this country are so deep-seated. There was a postal worker, a federal government, was arrested, and he was doing his job. And so my question to you is, like, what's the real revolution? My thing is, is the revolution, like, can we, like, tear down this fear of this black skin? Because
no,
until until this world sees us as one, not a threat and something to fear, all the issues that we have, they stem from that.
But it's like with everything in America is about like solving things after the fact. And like really when it comes down to it, like issues like, you know, not necessarily criminal justice, the system, but like why we are where we are. Like there are major things that aren't being, like money has not being put towards that contribute to all of these issues. Like, you know, like she said, the middle class communities that all of a sudden became ghettos and the schools became so bad. I mean, those are all ripple effects that we're feeling, you know, however many years later when you start sucking the money out of those communities. And then it's like, well, what do you expect? But without addressing that, you can't just like let a bunch of people out of jail and think that that solves the problem. But what's even the root of
that? That something inherently is less than about this black skin, this black culture, than these white people in these rural parts of America who are on meth.
I mean,
they deserve more compassion than the black child. Like if you put two stories up, a black girl goes missing and a white girl goes missing, all of the media attention will go on the white girl. If you look at what's happened in Europe right now with terrorist attacks versus terrorist attacks on the continent, all of the attention is on the European continent. Yes, so the question is, if you're talking about a revolution for black people,
when is black skin going to matter?
Now you're talking about changing minds.
Yeah, but the thing is, part of it does matter. Like, with your revolution for us in this country, it'll be against one of two things that will have to make a significant change. The one probably most important is the government, is the system. The other thing is big business. Is big business going to actually acknowledge us so we don't have issues where it's like, well, we'll give them money, but we ain't really giving y'all no money. Like, y'all can, they can do as many businesses as they want, but if we try to open up stuff, it's like, nah, we ain't with that. The other thing is they're not going to stop fearing us because there's a reason they fear us. It's because the powers that be know how great we are. And if I am, I'm just gonna say, if I'm at the top and I know this person below me, if I let them get to my level, they're passing me. So hell no, I'm not gonna let them get to my level. No, I'm not. They're gonna continue to perpetrate the fear because they know if we get what they have, they fucked. Because what you think we gonna, we gonna want everything fair. We get to where we want, we gonna be like, you know what? We've been dealing with the foot on our neck for 400+ years. It's your turn. You see what that's it's like to be a minority.
For sure.
Well, yeah.
That's so interesting because I find black people to be some of the most compassionate.
Exactly. I don't even see that happening. To be honest,
But you're asking human beings to get a taste of power and not act on it.
When you're talking about tribalism, that's what you're talking.
Yeah,
about.
Like
when, yeah, and you see it, and you really see it happening with even in the shift in Los Angeles between the political power shifting completely out of the African-American community and now into the Latino community. Mm-hmm. And so what do you see? You see all these jobs where black folks used to hire other black people to work at these jobs, and now you see they're all being held by Latino, Mexican, Chicano folks. And not hating on that, that's just sort of how this shift happens. And I wonder, my father used to always say, he used to like point out to me how there's sort of this systematic, basically erasure of black people in imagery and whatnot. And I was talking to somebody at work the other day, and she was talking about the diversity of this school. And she was like, yeah, I love this school. It has Persians, Latinos, Koreans, Eastern Europeans. I just love the diversity. And I was like, wow, there's nothing in that even sounds like a person that has dark skin, even that was part of the continent of Africa. And it's so interesting to me that as you have other cultures in this country, you know, with one, financial power, which is what we don't at all use to our advantage. I think we've used in this country our political power. I don't know if anybody would disagree or agree with that, but I think we've effectively used political power to sort of change policies or whatnot, but we haven't effectively used our financial power at all. when you talk about our buying power, what that could have done, whether that is...
But is that because you have not been aware of it?
No, we just choose not to. There are black banks, but black people go and put their money in Bank of America.
Why is that? See, it's a
mentality.
So it's a mentality of going against your own.
Yes.
A lot of people would say part of that was when integration infiltrated black community, we lost this sense of supporting your own, because when we had to,
so the revolution. The revolution should be go back to your own, because otherwise, how else are you going to move forward if you don't understand the sensibility of like taking back?
Well, what's strange about it is we already do live in a segregated society. We just don't support financially segregated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a lot of problem is you have enough of us who, when we've tried to support our own, and our own hasn't delivered the quality that is necessary, you know, we're like, well, we don't want to deal with it. And you have enough of that, and then you have the media, those who want to perpetrate that, see that, and they're like, well, let's just, we'll make this go from like some to all of them.
They're teething problems. They're things that, of course, that would happen at the beginning. You have to overcome that.
Right, and then we're not fully realizing that a lot of other groups, they'll support theirs.
Yeah.
Of course. But before we
get too far off track, I do want to make sure we keep this on like the political moment, because really then the question is, so what is our expectation of these front runner candidates with regards to these issues that we're talking about within the black community then? What is our expectation?
I mean, my expectation as far as the black voting bloc is for that the younger generation to have really open, serious dialogue with the elders, not just for, if anything, but for seeing where their elders stand and listening. That's it. The elders might be able to give and bring them something that is like, you know what, I should vote for Hillary if Bernie doesn't get the nod, or I should vote for Hillary, period, you know, depending on the argument that they make. But that it be a dialogue, and that the younger people who emotionally feel a connection to Bernie because of his policy stances or his number one policy stance, that they articulate that with their family. And I've been calling family in New York. My family in Wisconsin, I'm not real close with, so I ain't really calling them. But I've been calling them in New York just to be like, yo. And one I know is a huge Hillary supporter, but I was just like, all right, let's talk this out. You know, like, why are you hating on Susan Sarandon? You know what I mean? Like,
do you think any of that has to do with social media and media in general? Because when I think about my grandparents are not on social media. They do not even have a computer. They are only CNN.
They watch mainstream news,
television.
Of course.
And if Bernie's, first of all, Bernie doesn't really have, their impression probably of Bernie Sanders is that he's a socialist and all this stuff. So they have no idea, right? So think about that whole part of our community is not on social media. All the stuff I hear about Bernie and read about Bernie is on social media.
Yeah.
It's all online. That's the way I've gotten to know him, that, you know, other than going to the campaign website.
You know, the elders, they vote the most.
Yeah. And my thing is, they vote the most. And we have a whole part of our community that can't vote, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a whole other issue that has to be addressed as well.
So the question is, I applaud you, Tash, for even having those conversations. I can't really have that conversation with Grandma and Papa.
Why not?
Because it's where they are in their lives. They're in the twilight. They're in the latter years of their life. They are not. They're in this place where they don't really rock the boat like that. Like, they are literally not trying to have. They lived through. My grandparents were born in the Depression. They are not at 84 and 86 years old trying to be revolutionaries with the last parts of their lives. It's just that's not where they're at mentally. They've been through. They're from the South. They migrated to the West Coast. My grandfather was in two wars, the Korean and Vietnam, three tours. Grandma worked here. They're working class people. They retired. Like, that is not a priority.
I agree. They voted for Obama.
I would say they voted for Obama. But Obama was mainstream.
Yeah. So I can say this. If you have a passion about a candidate outside of the one that the mainstream media is covering the most, you can just introduce it with a story. Your grandparents love a good story. And you maybe can't frame it as a revolutionary candidate, as someone who's going to come in and dismantle the system. You can have a conversation about all the social you can tell them how much they enjoy their Social Security and, you know, and their Medicare. And like the person who is going to protect it the most. But you can turn it into an allegory about a nameless. You don't have to name a candidate, but a nameless person who's been working in, you know, government and politics for forever long. And I mean, you know, have a narrative, craft, give it an arc. You know, like
I really believe that's a noble, beautiful cause. I really honestly believe that
we have to take them to the polls and vote for them.
We just we really have to stop. We've had this conversation before. I believe we really have to stop leaning on, depending on our elders, our long ago revolutionaries. This new fight, this new concern.
No offense, some of them got us into this mess in the first place. Yeah, I mean, this is true.
Thing is, this conversation really needs to be happening with these young brothers and sisters between the ages of 18 and 37. And by the way, you said mid-30s a few moments ago. You did just have a birthday. You're actually moving into another generation. So I just want you to be careful about that.
I just also, I think like when it comes down to certain, like when you think about things, like I guess it depends on your approaches. And so like my approach has never been to change minds because I don't really believe in like you're saying, like the value of Black people, like
we don't believe in the value of Black people.
No, like I don't believe that there's like a magic solution to like making America all of a sudden like see the light and treat people equally. I believe that you force people to do these things through policy and laws, and you force them to adhere to certain regulations or however you want to frame it. And actually, it's funny because Hillary Clinton believes that as well, but
do you really believe that, Alicia?
I do. And I believe that 100%.
I'm asking you because someone who is well studied in the law and the history of America has that. Can you give me a solid case where that has worked and has been a longstanding?
Yeah. Why we are where we are is all. I mean, if you think of what because the civil rights movement. Well, yeah. But they were fighting for laws to be passed.
They were fighting. But like I said earlier, it all came because of death and violence. When white people saw Black people being brutally beaten on TV,
that's when they were like, whoa, changed things.
This is our country. This is what we do. And so it wasn't until our bodies were shredded and torn and beaten, burned and hanged until people had the compassion to think, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't treat
them. But how did they get to that compassionate point? Because there was a point when they were just as willing to slaughter us, right? So that shift between, you know, slavery to, oh my God, that's not us, came through.
When did that consciousness happen? First of all, that was decades and decades of
for years and years and years, they continued
of people fighting, right? So then the reason why we have the civil rights movement, because you had this sort of critical mass of people who were willing to say enough is enough, and at whatever cost, whether that be the terrorizing of my family, the death of our neighbors, or death of me, that we're going to fight for this change.
Let's go even back further, like right after slavery when we had the Reconstruction. And the National Guard was in place in the South to keep peace. And there was peace. Black people were elected to the Senate in South Carolina. Yeah. And then guess what happened? A new president got elected. He yanked that National Guard out. And then it all went back to how it was. And it got worse. I mean, that's what ushered in, like, the Jim Crow era. And all I'm saying is that, as sad as it is, we needed the government to say, we're going to stand here and watch every single thing you do. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we know if it's left up to you, you're not going to do the right thing. And I don't have a problem with that. And I guess that's what I'm saying is I don't mind forcing certain things. Now, when you start to talk about this on a deeper level, people get very funny because what it would take is a lot of things that would make a lot of people really uncomfortable, like housing and like, you know, drawing neighborhoods and forcing integration in schools, like things that people have moved away from. But I mean, this is just my opinion, is that those are the only things that do force things to change. And if we sit around waiting for people to come to their senses, I'm just saying, I hear things, I see the Trump rallies, I hear things, I see the things that people our age write, the friends of mine that went to that I went to college with that have a lot of friends from the Midwest and the South, and they're just as racist. Like, I'm like, I don't see anything changing. Like, nobody's waking up all of a sudden. I mean, yes, there is definitely progress, no doubt about it. I'm just saying that it's not enough for me. I don't feel comfortable with it. And I don't see minds just changing without external factors. So that's why I love Bernie Sanders, because I believe that he is willing to at least take it as far as anyone who's been in the position that he's in.
Let me ask you a question. Why then, given his stance and his adamant stance against the policies of Hillary Clinton and just her platform, why then wouldn't he be as radical enough to run independently? Why is he saying he will support the Democratic ticket?
Well, he has explained that the reason why he's running as a Democrat is because you just can't win as an independent. I mean, it's just, and he just would never have been able
to. Because of finance.
Yeah, and it's just like, we're just a two-party system, you know? Yeah, I mean,
my thing is that you're saying that you.
But isn't that what you probably need to change?
Right, but he knows it's not
going to
change this election.
But see, that is antithetical to what you're claiming.
But also, remember, but no.
Is that a mirage then?
No.
If that's the case, if you guys are really about revolution, and I'm not saying you guys is a pejorative or that I don't plan to vote in that way, I don't know who I'm voting for yet. But if you are saying that it's about revolution, it's about this change and this shift, then that is really a by any means necessary thing. Or you are also playing the politics game as well.
I think that's right. You do need it.
Absolutely. Kind of, yeah. I mean, you have to play to if there's no. Okay, first of all, let's like really step back to when Bernie Sanders announced he was running and he was getting like, what, 3% or something. Mm-hmm. So I don't think in any imagination of his did he imagine it was going to end up being what it has. He might have considered running as an independent if he knew he was going to be getting the traction that he has, because it would have been an actual threat. But he didn't. I don't think he thought that. And so in his mind, the only way to have any impact on the Democratic Party and on who the likely winner was going to be, who we all think probably is Hillary Clinton, was by running against her. And he had to run as a Democrat. I mean, that's just the facts of the matter. I don't have an issue with it. There are people that totally will not support Bernie Sanders because he's running as a Democrat, by virtue of that.
I would have an issue with that.
Yeah.
I have an issue with someone who's not actually following their own beliefs and saying, well, this is what my convictions are, and yet I'm going under a party that I think is lesser than myself.
But let me clarify, Malcolm...
He does caucus
with the Democrats, and Malcolm actually mischaracterized. Him and Hillary Clinton are not polar opposites of policy at all. It's just I feel like he just takes her a little bit further. Right. I mean, the best quote that I've seen is like, he's what the Democrats should be and she's what the Republicans should be. Like, that should be the differences between the parties. But anyway, it's not.
New Labour.
Yeah, it's not a polar opposite. He's not like sacrificing his ideals by running with the Democrats. It's like more the corporate nature of the Democrats.
It sounds like he's more for today's America.
I think so, but you know.
That's what I'm hearing. That's what I'm hearing now. It's like, it seems like.
Well, today's America has people who also support Trump and are racist and sexist.
Yeah, but
and it's crazy. This is what's interesting about this idea of today's America. I'm glad you said that, because I often wonder, are we literally a continent with several countries? I mean, when you think about
the divided states,
we're so divided. Yeah. And I was talking to somebody at work the other day who's a libertarian, and he was like, I'm tired of the federal government intervening in what should be state issues. And I think what happens is there's a lot of people who feel that the federal government is too involved. But is there anything specifically that you all would say when it comes to like the black community? There was a huge, huge expectation that the first black president would do all this stuff for the black community. There was.
Maybe not if we weren't paying attention.
Do you really not believe and understand that?
Lisa just said by people who weren't paying attention. I was paying attention, and nothing about him said that he was going to do something for the black
people. It's not about him saying it. It's about him. Okay, let's start saying if Hillary gets in, Do you not think there's going to be people who are like, oh, she's going to focus on women issues?
Yes, because she talks about women's issues.
Yes, but Barack talks. Barack admits
he is it.
Yeah, Barack admits that there are issues with.
But if Carly Fiorina was in there, I wouldn't expect that there would be. She would be a woman. Who would, or Ben Carson or Clarence Thomas, I wouldn't expect because, them to address those issues.
But Ben Carson is a Republican, so most people ain't going to give them. They're not going to give him no love anyway.
But the difference is that Barack Obama actually ran with a platform of change, mm-hmm. right? And so people thought that change meant, oh, this black man is going to change things for me, black person. People actually believe
and
that.
He did change things for them, black
not
person.
Not in the way that they
didn't,
expected.
I didn't expect him to address black
but people but did. Saying, this people is why you had the conversation that. Coming from Dr. Cornel West and Tavis Smiley, because they felt like he didn't specifically address the black
which
community.
Their criticism was valid if it's about he shouldn't take our vote for granted and we should hold him
right.
But
my thing is, what are we holding these new candidates are we holding them to the same standard that we held President Barack Obama when it comes to black community and black issues? And the thing about it is,
I think they should be held to a higher standard.
Why?
Because there's a freedom when you're white to defend black people that black people don't have, you know?
Privilege.
And he had to play a certain role, mm-hmm. I think. He's the first black president. Honestly, the people who are upset, it's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
Like, it is. The idea that he would be this black man and, like, come in and, like, wreck you all the black people.
Can I hear your black man voice again?
We would never have another black president if he had done that. And his whole goal, I personally believe, was to make it so we would be open to having another black president someday.
And you see how crazy they went with how moderate he is. Can you imagine if he had been actually...
That's what I'm saying. He had... And it's understandable.
He wouldn't have got the second term.
It's completely understandable. Now, like a Hillary Clinton, she has no holes barred in that area, in my opinion. Like, she could easily take up that mantle. And given the fact that if she gets the nomination, black people are a huge part of why
she can't
she
win
would
without
get.
Black people.
Absolutely, she would
and
be
the
losing.
Thing that's also very interesting about this idea
is... We'll see if she pays us back.
Like the conversation that's having a lot of diversity and inclusion circles is this idea of white allyship. And that there are certain conversations that white allies have to have on behalf of people of color, that basically you have to have that conversation and be courageous to have that conversation, because the conversation as it comes from a person of color is now being heard as white noise. And so when it does mm-hmm. come from the voice of a peer, of a cultural peer, somehow it's heard.
Absolutely.
Right? And so it has a little bit more of an impact. So I would agree with you. I think there is a higher standard, and I think there is a responsibility, particularly given that basically you're expecting a culture. It's basically like saying, Native Americans, you need to fix yourself. You need to increase your population. What's wrong with you guys with this small population? And they had nothing to do with the dismantling of their culture. Mm-hmm. And that those who did have that responsibility should absolutely be at the forefront of trying to rebuild that.
Right. Totally. Shoot, I was going to say something and I just lost my train of thought.
I don't know. Is this a good place to end?
Oh, no. What I was going to say was something that Michelle Alexander touched on, and what Chris Hayes actually criticized was, which I think is actually could be seen as a positive, depending on how you look at it, which was about that Bernie Sanders' revolution right now is mostly white people. And I'm like, those are the people that we needed to get on board with this. Like, the black people should be the easier people to get on board than the white people. And so, to me, it's positive that white people are so on board with Bernie Sanders and what he's talking about. And honestly, I do believe, unfortunately, Bernie just had a really bad timing with a lot of things. Like, I was giving the example of this friend of mine on Facebook. She's a 50-year-old black woman in Texas, and she wrote a post about, you know, Bernie Sanders not being a Christian. And I was like, really shocked that her friends were all extremely defensive of him. And these are like, you know, middle-aged black women in the South. And they were like, well, you know, plenty of...
Presumably. They
were like, well, I mean, most of them are. But they were just like defending in the sense of like that... they're like, you know, if you're going to vote for the most Christian, you would vote for Ted Cruz, and none of them are going to do that. And also, just like as far as
and he doesn't really represent Christianity that way.
Right. Well, you know,
he's evangelical.
Kind of he does. He's pretty representative of evangelicals.
If you look at the Jesus, the Christ, he don't represent.
But
Jesus
evangelicals, you can't acknowledge that he's representative.
No, I'm
represents a segment of Christianity.
That's
evangelical
conversation.
It's yeah, that's conversation. What they are. But anyway,
but yeah, I hear what
the point was that people were responding to her and saying like they were supporting Bernie because he walks the walk and it's more important. Like his actions are more Christian like than some Christians. This is what they were responding. I was so like shocked and like taken aback by the response that they had, and I was just like so sad because I just feel like I'm seeing that awakening happen, but it's just coming too late for a lot of people. A lot of like Texas has already voted, you know what I mean? And
I have someone in my family in Georgia who said, you know, I really preferred Bernie Sanders, yeah. but I didn't vote for him because I didn't think he had a chance. And had I known, I would have voted for him.
Well, this is why California is going to be very critical.
I actually believe that
Bernie Sanders could take California.
Totally.
I think he might.
And it's such a huge, that would be such a huge boost for the, oh, and New York, oh, we still have New York. I actually think that he could take California, and I actually think he could do something with New York.
Absolutely.
So those are huge states. And I wouldn't put anything past the Bernie Sanders campaign to come through and basically shock the Hillary campaign in California.
Hey, it's technically
hello, you got
possible.
The Bay Area, you got L.A. He's not going to get no parts of San Diego. Central Valley, no.
No.
But he can definitely hold down Bay Area.
Oh, for sure.
And he
sure.
can hold down
he's made for the
parts
Bay Area.
Of L.A. And he those are huge, huge populations. I mean, when you talk about San Francisco, San Jose, and they're huge college communities.
I just also want to make just one more point about the state of black people voting, because I do think that we unfortunately tend to categorize us as all like sort of on similar like wavelengths as far as our politics. And there are a lot of conservative black people that aren't going to vote for Bernie Sanders because that's not where they are. And I think we sometimes forget that there are liberal black people and conservative black people.
Moderate.
And I'm like, if you are a moderate center person, you should vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, that makes sense. Like, I don't expect you to vote for Bernie Sanders if he doesn't align with your views. And I think sometimes we assume like everyone would agree with
that. That's a very good point. I think of that in thinking about this topic of what's the state of the voting bloc. It really, for me, comes down to I don't think that we as a community really vote as a bloc anymore. I don't think that...
Not this election.
I don't think that that's... And that's what it comes... I mean, as it pertains to the Democratic candidates... I think overwhelmingly black
right.
people are
with
still voting liberal.
Forget about it.
Like, it's not happening. But when it comes to these two particular candidates, it's very, very interesting. And, you know, I mean, we didn't really talk about the voting bloc of the black people who are the Ben Carsons and these preachers who are standing up for Donald Trump and
right.
stumping for him. They're real. They're a part of our community. You know what I mean? I'm a person who absolutely acknowledges Condoleezza Rice because she's brilliant in a lot of ways just because we didn't have the same politics. I will always acknowledge her as the historic significance that she is to this community. But I think it's important for us to, particularly on this podcast, I'm sorry that the brother John Wood is not here because that conservative side is a very important side to hear from. And it helps us to have a perspective.
I think, was it Roland Martin who did a roundtable with, like, black Trump supporters? Somebody did.
Yeah. And so did The brilliant, what's his name?
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of his show.
Oh, my goodness.
But thank God for Larry Wilmore. One of the women was like, he's gangster. And if you don't know anything about Donald Trump except that he's Donald Trump, I totally can understand why that's appealing, like, and a politician. So I think that we probably don't even... Like, I think that Donald Trump could probably get more black people than any of the other Republicans.
Did you guys read the article that came out about the, was it his campaign manager that walked off recently? And she basically, I think it was his campaign manager. I could be incorrect, but
it's
was
not
some,
the manager, because the manager is the one that just got in trouble for hitting a
woman. Oh, I know you mean the woman who basically exposed.
She's like this, the PR strategist.
Yeah.
She was saying that his intention was never to actually win.
Right.
That was
not ever his
goal. He just wanted to be able to say, I could have been the president of the United States. But his ego has gotten in the way with all of the success that he's had. And I'm like, on that alone, people should be
running for the hills.
Right. Because this is somebody who was clearly not prepared for the job
at all.
I thought it was very, very telling what she was saying. You know what I mean? I was like, wow. You know, because for him, to me, Trump is, okay, so he's this American businessman, but he's an entertainer, right?
Yeah, like celebrity.
We see him on, exactly. So this is all for show for him, you know, but to see that he is dealing with a large group of folk in this country who are just that ignorant and just that scared that some of the wild stuff that he says for them actually makes sense in regards to their being a leader. And what I keep hearing repeated constantly is that, you know, he's going to dismantle the system. He's going to blow everything up. And everything's been going downhill anyway. And so we just need somebody who's going to blow it up. And it's just driving me.
At the same time, he's got the same rhetoric that every politician has ever had, has ever been. He just knows how to make a show out of this whole process. Because at the end of the day, he too is a businessman. And his business interests are also interwoven in American politics.
He knows how to,
so he is not going to shut down his business. I mean, hello, he's got many business enterprises across seas and has immigrants and illegal immigrants.
All the things he talks bad about.
So he gets that. And the thing about it, this is what's, for me, most sad, and I'm sorry this went into another conversation, but he talks to these, it seems like that a lot of them are really a disillusioned working class white people.
Yes.
Or, but I'm just saying, like, what you see, like, the majority at the rallies. And Latinos, too. I mean, there's a whole, he's got a nice demographic going on. But it's like people who vote against their own interests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing that, for me, is most frustrating about just people in general, not even just politics, just everything, even local. When we don't know enough about the thing that we are so emotionally attached and fired up about. It's like this man, his literal business practice is antithetical to what you need.
And to what he's promising.
You want jobs. He sends jobs all over the globe.
Right.
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? But it's when you get so caught up in mob mentality, and I really would love to see a piece or read something about mob mentality, because what this, what presidential elections in America always bring me back to is the power of the mob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And you saw it during Obama. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was caught up in it, but we were a mob of people who were like, change. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And what that does to your mentality, your psyche, and you also, because I remember if anybody said anything about Obama, oh, you was going off. You was going off like you are the devil.
Right.
How dare you talk about President
Obama? There's still a lot of people like that.
You know what I mean? And the thing about it is sometimes that mentality causes you to think irrationally, causes you to not think, period.
Right.
And so I think that's what a lot of people get caught up in. I think that's also what's happening in Hillary and Bernie camps. I see people saying, can we stop talking about each other so harshly? Both of them are very viable Democratic candidates and are worthy of this office and are a better choice than any of the candidates on the other side. But the mob mentality moves people past their sense of sensibility.
All right. It sounds like this has been hashed out. I want to thank everybody for joining us on the Black Is break. I want to thank the head Negress in charge for allowing a brother to take the mic. You can reach us on the Twitter, on the Facebook. And is there anything else I need to say? And our phone number, which is 323-455-4219. I want to thank you and thank the round table for an amazing evening, day. Until we meet you and see you and talk to you again. Peace.
And I didn't talk.
Episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.